Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm George McAlvis, Head of U.S. Macro Strategy at MUFG, and I'm joined by Glenn Schultz, Head of Mortgage-Backed Securities Modeling and Strategy. It's Tuesday, January 11th, 2022. Welcome back to the podcast, Glenn.
Hi, George. Great to be here, and thank you for having me on.
Well, good to have you on, and thanks for agreeing to this. You know, for our listeners, today's podcast, you know, the tables have turned. I'm actually the one that's doing the interviewing as part of a three-part series where I'll be interviewing desk analysts from across the U.S. bond desks here at MUFG as part of our 2022 Outlook rollout. So, Glenn, as part of our first question and part of this first part of our interview, I thought it would be helpful and make sense for you to spend the next few minutes briefly summarizing some of the key takeaways from your agency MBS contribution that was featured in the 2022 Outlook report.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do so. First of all, I guess it's important to note that a lot of our 2020 views are really informed by the backdrop of 2020 and 2021, right? So first is, you know, we have this generational low in the 30-year mortgage rate. And I say that a little bit tongue in cheek, because I think this is about maybe the fourth time people have talked about generational lows in the mortgage rate since the bull market began in the 1980s. So it's no longer an intergenerational low, but it's an intra-generational low, which is really amazing when you think about that. And then naturally the growth in the Federal Reserve SOMA portfolio has been, you know, just quite explosive. And I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in a few minutes. But part of their efforts following the pandemic were really to support the residential housing market via asset purchases in the agency MBS sector. And so that actually was a strong demand fundamental. And, you know, it's a very price insensitive buyer. And then finally, it was the demand for residential housing that really picked up significantly over the last 2 years. And that was really pandemic-induced out-migration from cities and a desire for more personal living space to accommodate the kind of new work-from-home paradigm. So that falls into our 2020 views. And our expectation for 2022 is for fixed-rate issuance to decline between about 10 to 15% on a year-over-year basis. So we'll see gross agency MBS issuance probably between $2.3 to $2.5 trillion in terms of issuance. And then balance reductions, scheduled principal and prepaid principal are going to amount to about $1.7 trillion. So that brings our outlook for 2020 in terms of net issuance between $600 and $800 billion. So that's down from the previous 2 years, but there's still substantial net issuance for agency MBS. And then we believe that the Federal Reserve support is going to result in a net demand decline of about $445 billion. That's from their tapering or quantitative easing that they're going to take on. And then our analysis of the major holders of agency MBS actually suggests to us that there could be as much as $500 billion in incremental demand, and that really represents the sideline buyers. So for us, we're really looking at the key in terms of valuation being the net decline in demand from the Federal Reserve and sort of the incremental demand that we believe are the sideline buyers just due to the relative richness of agency MBS, which was largely driven by the Federal Reserve purchases. And again, as I mentioned, Federal Reserve is really an indiscriminate buyer. They are not a value buyer. They're just a buyer in bulk, right? You know, this is our program, we're gonna buy, and our goal is to influence interest rates. They don't really care about, you know, what the value of the securities that they're purchasing are. But this still leads us to the idea that the mortgage basis is likely going to widen in early 2022 between 25 and 35 basis points as the Federal Reserve tapers and removes support for the agency MBS market. And so, but it's important to talk about how we're measuring the basis here. So we're measuring the basis versus the 10-year treasury. And I know a lot of people measure the basis versus 5-10 blends, but sometimes the blend from one quote to the next is a little bit different. And when you quote it off of 10-year treasuries, it's a certain basis, and everybody knows kind of what we're talking about because the 10-year treasury provides the underlying base for that. So this basis widening, we believe, is going to bring back, you know, the sideline investors, those who have just stepped out of the agency MBS market because of the Federal Reserve and the relative richness that the Federal Reserve brought into the market as they were trying to influence the mortgage rate. So where do we get this demand number from? Well, you know, we look at the major holders of agency MBS, and you know, obviously one of the major holders, the second largest holder really at this point as of Q3 2021, was a Monetary Authority. So they're holding about $2.5 trillion, and I think that's important to put that in perspective, because the first through the second QE brought the total sum of portfolio to about that level. So their holdings of agency MBS are really, you know, substantial, right? But aside from that, once you exclude them, the chartered depository institutions or banks are holding about $3.4 trillion, and they're the largest buyer. They're followed by the rest of the world, you know, foreign investors, which are about $1.1 trillion. So when we look at sort of foreign investors, and we look at those deltas from 2019, 2020, and 2021, you know, we come to the conclusion that there's probably about 100 to 200 billion in terms of sideline demand from foreign companies. Similarly, we look at something on the order of about $100 to $150 billion in sideline demand from REITs. You know, obviously the GSEs hold in their portfolios, but you know, that's roughly $200 billion or so, and that's really transactional in terms of their portfolios. So, you know, when we get to the rest of the major holders, credit unions, property casualty, life insurance, mutual funds, those types of buyers, you know, we get the remaining $200 billion or so in demand. Now, you know, obviously, I don't think that the basis widening is going to be immediate, and everybody, you know, the sideline demand is going to jump in, you know, immediately either. But, you know, when we start getting into the areas of, you know, 80, 90 basis points versus the 10-year treasury, then we are looking at MBS being on the cheap side, and I believe that's where we'll see these sideline buyers come into the market. So even though we're in an environment of rising interest rates, you know, the Federal Reserve beginning to step away from their support of the agency MBS market, we really don't see, you know, a dramatic widening of the basis beyond sort of the normal high-low range, because we think that these buyers are going to come back into the market. And so that's going to limit any additional, you know, basis widening that we may normally have seen from this kind of, you know, pullback in demand of the market. So when we're looking at our net issuance and our gross issuance numbers, we put those in perspective, and still the as I said, the net and the gross issuance numbers are substantial numbers relative to what we've seen in history. But we are beginning to normalize somewhat as the Federal Reserve pulls away, which is not a bad thing for the agency MBS. Well, how that path of normalization plays out is going to be interesting. Our view is that it will be a reasonably disciplined path towards normalization with, you know, no real big surprises. So, you know, we are in a position right now where when we look at the mortgage basis, like I said, versus 10-year treasuries, you know, we could see something in the order of about 80 to 90 basis points. So we got a little room to go there yet. And then another thing that we tend to look at is in the mortgage market is the primary secondary spread. Now that really informs us as to the profitability for originators. And right now the primary secondary spread is around 110 basis points. And it's a little bit wide by historical standards, but recall that primary secondary spread widened out to almost 250 basis points at the onset of the pandemic. And our view is that the primary secondary spread will likely move into more of its historical average and probably be, you know, somewhere around 80 to 90 basis points by the end of the first half of 2022. And what that means is that, you know, the originators will still profitably be able to originate. And so it's the mix of originations as we move into 2022 that is really going to be the determining factor. So our expectation is that refinance.
Glenn, I'm going to jump in here. That's very comprehensive. And I think kind of starts to answer part of the second question in many ways, but so thanks for that. And you know, we are seeing some spread widening already in the beginning of the year as there has been some recent developments that have surfaced up, you know, in between our, you know, publishing of the 2022 outlook, which is the fact that, you know, there's now the idea that the Fed may start to shrink its balance sheet, not just conclude the tapering, which would then, you know, ostensibly potentially put mortgages back into the market, not just them no longer adding to their balance sheet, but actually shrinking it. You know, given that, you know, many of the points that you mentioned in the write-up as well as the data, it was assuming it was primarily just tapering. If we now also see the Fed shedding its portfolio and not reinvesting a portion of ongoing pay downs, does that change things a little bit for you? Because I mean, I think you know, 80, 90 seems like a rough kind of right range trade, and I'm generally in agreement with you, but do you think that if the Fed were to actually let the portfolio shrink and mortgages go along with it, that we get a little bit of an overshoot on that? And then mm-hmm. you know, is it really just a timing mismatch between those, you know, sideline investors that you just went through, and like what really gets them compelled to move in?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a good question. And my feeling is that if they go into quantitative easing, they begin reducing the portfolio, say more so than MBS actually run off on prepays. I don't think that severely impacts the view that we have in terms of the mortgage basis. And the reason that I say that is when quantitative easing first, you know, started, you know, way back when, you know, the idea or what people would always say is, well, the Federal Reserve is taking duration out of the market, right? And if you think about mortgage-backed securities, at least the way that I look at it, you know, as the Federal Reserve began to add more and more mortgage-backed securities, obviously they wanted to support the housing market, but in my view, what they were doing is not so much taking duration out of the market, but they were taking optionality out of the market, right? And so, you know, the higher the optionality that you have, then the greater relative spread that you're going to see. So if they were putting a lot of optionality back into the market, then you would expect to see spreads widen out. But remember where they've been buying over these last years, largely new production coupons. And so the MBS that the Federal Reserve owns are largely new production. You know, they're new production 2.5, 3, 3.5. Those have been the favorite of originators for origination purposes, you know, in terms of soliciting refinancing. But, you know, as we begin to move upward in rates, these coupons are going to move out of the money relatively quickly. So we already have, you know, the 2.5s out of the money. The 3s are almost out of the money. And, you know, if we get another 10, 20 basis points higher, 3.5s are out of the money. So they're not going to put a lot of optionality back into the market. And these coupons are going to, you know, extend somewhat. So they will be putting some duration back into the market via out of the money or near the money MBS. But the amount of duration that they put into the market via that is not comparable to the option cost or the optionality that would otherwise be put into the market. And that's kind of how I think about it. Okay, what is the optionality versus duration that you're putting in? I don't think they're putting in a lot of optionality at this point. So it doesn't really affect my view on the basis.
No, that's a smart way of looking at it. And thanks for, you know, clarifying that. I do think that the idea of the extension, but also maybe prepays won't be as high as you kind of infer because rates are going to be higher overall. So I guess maybe on the last topic to wrap things up, it's a little bit more macro, you know, but related overall to the mortgage market, you know, which is something you've been, you know, closely following as well, which is just kind of the buoyancy in the housing market and just kind of want to wrap up with your latest thoughts on affordability, the ability for, you know, the sector to weather, you know, these higher rates coming from a combination of, you know, slightly wider spreads and higher rates. You know, what do you think about the housing market here, you know, in this backdrop?
What? You know, the home price appreciation that we have seen has been, you know, pretty dramatic. You know, a lot of people have opined that we have another housing bubble and those types of things. But I was never big into the housing bubble thesis during the financial crisis. I thought there were other things that were at play there. And mostly I always thought it was Federal Reserve tightening that was at play. Now I think that, you know, we're still in good shape as far as the house market is concerned, as far as valuations. If you look at like the Mortgage Bankers Index, Housing Affordability Index, that stands at about 140, 42 or so right now. And what that means is that the median income or household or person with the median income can buy 142% of the median home at the median home price. And that's the median home price as measured by the NAR, not the FHFA or Case-Shiller. And so that median home price is a little bit different in that it's not a constant quality. So if people start migrating upwards into the housing market, the higher price tiers, then their median price would go up potentially more than the constant quality indexes, sometimes less. And opposite would be holding true if they went downward in price tiers. So right now at about 352,000 median price, that's 142%. So that means we have room for two things to happen, either in combination or somewhat independently of each other. That is, mortgage rates could go up, or higher home prices could go up, and we would still have affordability levels that are greater than one. And in fact, these big affordability numbers that we have seen are really kind of more a phenomenon following the financial crisis than they were prior to the financial crisis. So housing affordability has actually been pretty high for the last, you know, two decades or so. And I think that we'll continue to see that. So if I look at where we're at, I don't think we're going to see double digit home price appreciation. And I think, you know, we could handle something on the order of a 7-10% home price appreciation. And at the same time, we would look at something on the order of about, say, anywhere between a 375 in upwards, maybe as much as a 4% mortgage rate could press to the market, and we would still have a relatively robust housing market. And by that I mean, you know, we would have, you know, obviously, you know, reasonable single digit home price appreciation on a go forward basis, and we would still have reasonable demand, right? So we still do have this large cohort of millennials that are coming into their peak home ownership years. We do have the cohort of people that believe work from home is going to continue and they want that space. And I do think that the longer this work from home goes on, the more it becomes a habit for people and the harder it's going to be for people to break that or for employers to break that habit. And I think they're going to have to acquiesce to some degree of work from home. So I think the demand fundamentals are in place, and we can see you know, normalization of HPI into single digits and somewhat higher mortgage rates, and everything will be okay as far as the demand side. And we'll still have relatively robust issuance. I mean, our net issuance would probably over time begin to move downward somewhat, just as a function of slowing demand in terms of that which we pulled forward kind of being realized. But, you know, we're still looking at a reasonably healthy housing market on a go forward basis, irrespective of mortgage rates, at least up to 4%, in my view.
Thanks, Glenn. That's a really comprehensive and pretty upbeat, you know, or at least sanguine outlook on, you know, the ability for both housing and then by extension, you know, mortgage markets should be able to weather these changes of, you know, of the Fed, you know, pulling back and rates naturally kind of normalizing here. So thanks for that. And for more, please, for our listeners and clients, you know, check out our 2022 Macro to Markets Outlook Report, which features many of the points as well as charts that, you know, Glenn has been referring to throughout this conversation. I also would like to remind our listeners, for those that would like to receive our strategy reports directly, please email your MUFG sales coverage or get in contact with myself directly on email or Bloomberg. Thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.